Yo.
Yo. Welcome to the 188th Wing Podcast, where you get your in-depth information about what's going on in your wing. I'm Master Sergeant Chauncey Reed, and today I have another ReBlue episode with Lieutenant Colonel Crom, along with special guest Tech Sergeant Kyle Coggins and A1C Miles Chrisman. Let's start with some simple introductions.
I'm Airman First Class Miles Chrisman. I'm a public affairs specialist here at the 188th Wing.
I'm Tech Sergeant Kyle Coggins. I'm Ops Group CSS.
And I am Lieutenant Colonel Michael Crom, current commander of the 188th Logistics Readiness Squadron. Different job than the last time I was here, so I'm happy to be here. Happy to be back.
Well, welcome all of you to the show. Sir, what is this session of ReBlue all about?
Well, this session is a bit of a follow-on from the first time we talked about followership and what that means, how to identify different levels of performance readiness. That's kind of the term we use for followership, the follower's ability to be ready to perform, how to identify that as a leader, and how to identify that yourself. Since everyone is a follower and everyone has a boss, we all answer to other people, what type of follower are you? And how can you identify different types of followers? Today, we're going to flip that a little bit and talk about how, as a leader, what you do with that, right? How do you lead based on knowing what kind of followers are following you? It's that simple. So I really want to kick this off first by thanking you for being here, Sergeant Coggins. It's awesome. I think the world of you, man. I think that you're an up-and-coming leader. And I'm hoping that this, you know, serves you in your future. And I'm excited about, you know, kind of getting rap with you. Airman Chrisman, I'm happy you're here, man, bringing that fresh, young perspective, because without that perspective as leaders in the Air Force, especially, if we don't have that perspective, we're missing the boat. We are missing it, right? So I'm happy that you're here. Sergeant Reed, thanks for putting this on, man. And I like that hook, man.
That's a pleasure.
Can we make sure we keep that hook from now on? That's tight. I really enjoyed it. So I want to know from your perspective, Kyle. We talked about last session followership. Well, what kind of follower are you? Are you the kind who needs lots of support to do the job you need to do? Are you the kind who needs little support? Do you need lots of direction? Or do you need little direction? What do you think? What kind of follower are you?
Yeah, I think I'm the type of follower, little direction, little encouragement. I really just need clear guidelines, left and right. So, you know, give me the task, give me the why, and then I'm pretty capable of following up, finding associated references, AFIs, whatever I need to get the job done. So, I'm a pretty easy follower, I'd say, very hands-off from a leadership perspective. All I need are clear intent, left and right boundaries.
Great. So I think if I were to talk to you about that, you know, I would say the type of leadership style, and we're going to get into the styles a little bit more, but I would say because you have a moderate to high competence, you just need to know where your limits are left and right, and a little support and encouragement along the way would do you well. So what that tells me is that to match that, your leader should offer you supporting behavior, not overly directive, telling you what to do, how to do it every single time, and not just fire and forget and hope that you meet the mark, but support you as you go out and do your things, right? So that's what this whole lesson's about. It's about identifying the type of follower that's following you and then offering them the type of leadership that best suits the moment so that they can be ultimately successful in executing their thing, right?
Yeah.
All right. What about you? What do you think, Airman Chrisman? What kind of follower are you? Need lots of direction, little direction, lots of support, little support?
I feel like I agree with what he said. Like, you can give me the direction and why I need to do this. And every so often, I'll probably need like a bump back in the right direction, but essentially, I can get the job done. You don't need to be standing next to me, like leading me on. I feel like Sergeant Reed can agree with that.
So the whole point here is that for first, the follower to know sort of what their needs are and what kind of follower they are. Sometimes you don't really get that right because you might be overly confident or not confident enough. So that's why it's important for the leader to kind of come in and help identify. For instance, let's just say you're like, yeah, man, I got this, but you have no idea what's going on, right? And so if there's like a training gap, that's where the leader can come in and provide training. That's an example of supporting behaviors. If you're fully trained, fully competent, fully engaged, that's when you would get to more of a delegating style. And again, we'll talk about that later. So other than now that we know how to identify like followers from a leadership perspective, what do you think the variables are that could affect the way a leader leads outside of the person, the follower? What are some variables that you think affect how a leader leads in any given moment?
I can say something that I've seen a lot in the past. We've gotten better at this, but the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that question would be kind of like line of sight tasking, right? So, you know, you start the day off, you have a plan, you get with the team, you say, this is what we're doing for the day. And then someone will come in with an emergency, or someone wasn't doing a good job on their own timeline. And so everything comes down last minute. And it's like, I need you to do this right now. And it kind of blows your plan up. So as a leadership, as a leader, like I said, you start with the plan, and someone comes in with a high emergent need out of left field. And that can kind of change the way you planned on handling that day.
Yeah, for sure. Like I feel like you read my notes, right? Because right on here, I have time and urgency of something that affects the way a leader leads. When an emerging threat comes, when a high-level task that comes up that seems to be prioritized over everything else or trump everything else, it comes in and, hey, I need you to do this right now. And it tends to come off as fairly direct. So, yeah, I would agree, time and urgency. So let me flip that real quick on you. What are you going to do as a leader to mitigate some of that, especially if those kinds of things cause stressors amongst the folks that work for you?
Yeah. Probably one of the hardest things to do, right, is to get a mass of people to continuously be proactive, right? And so the things we do, we have a lot of meetings, right? And we look at all the programs. And it's really communicating, finding the best way to communicate to the masses, continue looking forward. In the guard, everything's about resources, right? So a lot of emergencies come down to a lack of a resource. And so to be, you know, planning your trips ahead of time is something. And so, you know, we continuously look forward, right, and communicate to everybody. Guys, look forward, plan forward. Don't let something catch you off guard.
Sure. I know we've all heard the, you know, your lack of planning does not constitute an emergency on my part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good.
Like, I'm not sure I always agree with that, but
yeah. It shouldn't.
I think that what I heard you saying is, you know, try to plan effectively in advance can mitigate some of those emergencies.
Yeah. Easier said than done, but
yeah,
that's the goal.
That's great. Aaron Christman, what do you think? What have you seen, or what do you think are some variables or things that might change the way a leader leads or affects the way, affects the style that leaders choose in the moment?
I feel like a few things that might affect the leadership or the leader ability to lead effectively would be either the amount of people that they need, that they are over, that they need to lead, or their own personal workload if they have like extra duties or jobs of their own that they need to focus on.
Man, that's so good. I do not have that in my notes, but I'm writing that one down because I think you've hit something that is really important for not first level leaders, but second level leaders who are deciding what first level leaders spend their time doing. And so if I am your boss, Sergeant Reed, and I give you all these people and programs to manage, and I've given you too much, your leader, your standard go-to effective leadership style could really be affected because I've spread you too thin. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes.
Man, I love that. Like, that is really good. That actually challenges me right now in my new job with multiple levels of leadership under my command. It really makes me cognizant of how am I spending people's time? Am I giving them just the right amount of workload and tasks and oversight that matches their bandwidth? Man, that's good. See? That's why you're here, man. Man, that's good. Wow. So something else that I have on here that I'd like to add is mainly because my last job as the inspector general, I worked a lot with compliance, right? So I think the probability of being compliant in a program can affect the way a leader leads. What I mean is, if you have a program or a process that tends to run very smoothly, in compliance, no problems with it, we always pull it off really well, it gets highlighted as a best practice, do you think I need to be ultra directive as a leader of that program? Do you think I need to be real directive and say, do it like this and like that? Do you think that would be good?
No, I think then you get in, I don't know, I'm going to say you're micromanaging, right? I mean, if the program's running well, then that person's done that job.
That's right.
You let that continue to go as is.
I think so too. But on the flip side, if you have a program that tends to get written up a lot through various assessments or inspections, and it's very critical to mission success, but it's got a lot of problems, I would venture to say that a leader who tends to be more hands-off will probably get more directive in that moment, right? And I think it's important as followers to be aware of that sometimes, especially if we feel like, man, the boss is really getting involved in this. Man, I don't know. This feels maybe like micromanagement a little bit. Well, maybe not. Maybe it's something like this that's affecting the decision process within the leader's brain, thinking about how do I lead this moment? So I think that's probably awareness for all of us as we move forward. When we find things like this, sometimes just expectation management might be really helpful. So if you tend to be a leader who doesn't micromanage too much, it might be worth saying, hey, folks, we're having some struggles with this program here, and I'm not seeing a lot of solutions right now coming from the team. So I tell you what, here's what we're going to do. And you start directing in the way that you seem best after you've done your own analysis to say, I think I know the right way to fix this. Maybe you just preempt that with a little bit of verbal expectation management. I know I don't normally get this involved, but I feel like we're there. So here's what I'd like to do. You do this. You do this. I want it by this date, just like this. Let's go. So if you don't preempt with the expectation management, then there's a chance that the troops are like, what's going on? Well, the boss is losing his mind over here, right? So I think that's something to kind of keep in mind. The last bit is really, I told you, you know, outside of the follower, I was asking for examples. I think the biggest one, especially the one that I have underlined, is what the type of variable that affects leadership style should be the follower's competence and commitment, right? And that's what the lesson really today is about. It's about leaders understanding the competence and commitment levels of folks that are following them so that they can situationally lead in a specific manner for all people in all types of programs. For instance, you manage multiple programs. Some of them you do very well and you're very knowledgeable. And then there's probably others that I really don't have that one quite yet. And if I'm your supervisor, I probably need to lead you in those two programs slightly differently. You know, and so the model here that we talk about is depending on how competent and committed you are, I need to flex my leadership. I need to either be more or less directive and more or less supportive. So let's just say, for instance, if I'm going to be very low supporting, very low directive, what type of follower would that style of leadership work well for? And who would that not work well for? Very hands-off, no support, no direction. What kind of follower would that work for, and who would that not work for?
So, yeah, if you're hands-off and unengaged, really, I mean, you're probably working with, I guess, a seasoned tech sergeant, I would imagine, right? Someone who understands the programs and who has that technical expertise. You say, hey, I need this done. Got it, boss. Right, I'll go get that done. And I would say the exact reverse on the other side of the coin. You know, if you're having to be supportive and coaching and instructing and directive, you're probably dealing with a new troop. Maybe someone just transferred or they're new to the unit as a whole. I think it would be just that.
Right. And so I take the example of a younger airman who still going through formal upgrade training, right? You don't have all the answers yet. You're not a full-on subject matter expert in your career field. You're slowly getting there. But according to the Air Force, you know, until you're a 7 and 9 level, are you fully, you know, a subject matter expert? So until then, as your supervisor, you would need to provide a little bit more direction for you. If Sergeant Reed just said, here's the program, here's what needs to happen, have at it, and just walked away, you'd probably, well, you tell me, what would you be like?
Like if he just told me, hey, this is going on, can you go take some photos and write a story? It'd probably throw me for a loop. I'd start to panic a little bit. I'd try my best to get those things done. But knowing me and knowing my capabilities, if he was just completely hands off, like he left the office, I would struggle and probably wouldn't put out quality work that I know that I can.
Because what you probably needed in that moment, in the stage of your career, probably a little bit of direction in order to fill in the gaps of the things that maybe you just don't know or haven't been trained on, and a little bit of support and probable or possible encouragement to say, man, you got this. You know, I trust you. I know you can do this. We've done it before. You know, I want you to go do this. Here's why we're doing it. And, you know, and that's an example of how to, I need you to do X, Y, and Z just like this. And then that would be the directive side. And then a little bit of encouragement. You got this. I know you can do this, man. It's going to be awesome. I got other things to do. It's on you, brother. You got it. Right. And then you'd be like, oh, man, yeah, I got this. Right. And then all of a sudden you go and conquer and you're not freaking out. You don't have the anxiety that you talked about. So that would be an example of how Sergeant Reed would, if he typically just delegates all the time, he would need to alter that in order to get max effectiveness out of the task at hand. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the crazy thing about this concept is that the guy who built it, Dr. Paul Hersey, he calls the situational leadership model organized common sense, right? Organized common sense, where the amount of directive behavior a leader provides and the amount of supportive behavior a leader provides needs to directly complement the performance readiness or the abilities, the commitment, the confidence that the follower possesses. It's super simple. The problem is that we're all human beings, you know, squishy organic lumps of cells with emotions and baggage and all the things, right? So it becomes, even though it's a very practical, organized, common sense thing, it's not always that easy to do because of some of those variables we talked about, because of personality differences, right? So I think as the leader, you have the burden of owning those variables and mitigating them to the best of your ability, right? So I kind of wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk about specifically about supportive and directive behaviors. We talked very little bit about it, but what do you think are some examples of supportive? Let's go supportive first. What do you think examples of supportive behaviors are that leaders could exhibit to support their followers as they're going about their daily job?
When I think of the supportive, the low directing and high supportive, I don't know, my guardsmen almost come into mind, right? They have a very set task list. It is like 7 things and it's checkbox items. And they've got it down to a very good battle rhythm. And so what I see myself interacting with them is, again, going over their daily checklist at the very beginning of the day. And then as we go through, just, how's it going? Going well? You got that report already done? Good. Sweet. Good job. And then basically, you know, a wrap up at the end of the day. All the boxes checked? Everything got done? Sweet. So very, you know, I'm not having to sit with them and go over the day-to-day routine. Just, you know, just ensure that... that what I know that they can handle is basically getting done. Does that answer that?
Yeah. What about you? What do you think some examples of supportive behavior that you've either seen or that you would really like? You got your supervisor in the room, so be careful. you know, like what types of supportive behaviors do you think would aid someone who really needed support?
An example that comes to mind for me is just in the guard. You hear it all the time. The guard is a family. Everyone's very close. Everyone knows each other. Just having that connection with people, making sure that everyone's doing okay, being able to make sure people aren't, like, they're in a mentally good state helps, like, followers execute tasks, helps leaders feel more comfortable giving out those tasks, things like that.
Can you think of an example of where too much support would be bad, would not be ideal? Kyle, you go first. What do you think? Can you, you got any examples of that? Or too much support would might backfire?
The only thing that comes to mind is if maybe if you're not being honest with the results, right? So if you're continuously praising an individual, however, you're not getting the expected result, I would say then you're leading them astray. Like, I'm doing great. I'm checking the boxes. Well, in reality, no, you're not. And maybe I do need to engage more and let you know that, hey, we need to get back on track here.
Dude, that's solid.
Honest feedback.
Yeah, that's good. Right. Yeah, that is really good because you could, the cheerleader type. So I think that's the thing here. I think that's probably the lesson is that let's just say your natural leadership style is to be somewhat of a cheerleader. You could actually do a disservice, according to you, if your cheerleading is not factual. Like if it's not based on results, if it's reinforcing substandard performance, that's the last thing we'd want, right? So that's good. I really like that. Let's switch to directive, right? Directive behavior, I think sometimes, especially if you're a professional, gets a stigma of micromanager. Directive behaviors equals micromanager. Now, I offer up that direction is often needed, and I would say using direction appropriately is not micromanaging, it's just managing, right? But if you have too much directive, too many directive behaviors, or too specific of a directive behavior that doesn't match the readiness of the follower. Like if the follower is highly competent and knows exactly what needs to be done, if the leader comes in and says, I want you to make this report just like this. It needs to be 17 pages. I need it to be in this font with this size margins. And it needs to make sure that it is in black colored font with make sure the cover sheet has red on it somewhere. Make sure, you know what I mean? And it's like, whoa. I've done these reports for like 20 years, bro. Like I'm good. Like I know how to do this, right? So if you come in too hot and offer too much direction to somebody who is already high speed and high capable, what do you think that does?
I feel like that'll just irritate them. They'll start to lose a little bit of respect for their leader. At some point, if it keeps going on, they'll just not want to work for them. They'll lose their like passion for their job, and it'll just hurt the group as a whole.
Yeah, and a little bit more to that, too. I've seen that happen where people feel belittled. Like, you know, you don't think I can do this? You don't know that I know how to do that? And so, again, there's a big disservice to the member there on that front as well.
Everybody wants to feel like they're valuable. And like there's a meaning to what they're doing, and that they have a solid purpose, right? And that can steal some of that stuff away.
Right.
Yep.
And so if there's anyone listening to this right now that has worked for me in the past, what you probably don't know is that I second guess nearly every direction I ever give anyone because I'm constantly thinking about, is this too much? Is it not enough? Am I getting it just right? Because I never want to talk down to people and belittle them by giving them too much information, but I also don't want to leave people hanging by not giving them enough. And you're like, I don't know what to do. What do I do? Somebody help me. All right. So I struggle with that, man. I struggle with that hardcore. And what I've found, and I, Take it or leave it. Free advice, right? Advice is worth what you paid for it, and you're not paying a dime for this, so take it or leave it. Is that more often than not, people appreciate the extra direction if you use it in the right tone, right? If you just offer up something that has left and right limits, see, even you, Kyle, you even talked about left and right limits. Yeah. You're a capable dude, man. Like, most people don't need to tell you exactly how to do it. But even you are like, man, I just want to know what my left and right limits are. How far, you know, can I go this way or that way? More times than not, I have found that no one has ever really been belittled by me offering up direction. So I've kind of learned that. I still struggle with it. I still want to get it just right. But it's hard because it's an art. It's an art. And it is, you have to tailor it for each person. That's what makes leading groups really hard,
yeah.
is that everyone's got a different style or a followership level. And that's really tough. I want to share an example that happened to me. And if my former boss is listening, ma'am, you're awesome. This is not a dig on you. It was the situation, right? So here's the deal. Here's what happened. So I took a brand new job a few months after COVID started. And so I PCS'd in like the heart of COVID, like when people were like wiping down their groceries with Clorox wipes, if you could find them, like those days, like, man, baby, guess what? You go to the grocery store and you get toilet paper and mama thinks it's a big deal. She's like, baby, you brought home some toilet paper. Like you were the man if you could find some TP. Like that, this is where we were at,
yeah.
COVID-wise, right? So we had to PCS in the middle of that. I get to a new job. I show up at work. There's nobody there. And I'm like, I don't even know what to do. Like, here's a computer. Maybe I'll just take it and try to log into it. And so I kind of got settled a little bit, but it was like, hey, everyone needs to go work from home. So I had to go work from home in a brand new job. Hadn't met my boss in person for a few weeks after I started working there. And here's the thing. Everyone was trying to figure out how to telework after years of not, you know, and everyone was trying to figure out what right was supposed to look like. And everyone was trying to figure out how to use Teams and how to use the mute button, right? We were all trying to figure that out. And I tell you what, I really struggled that first year in that job because I didn't have enough direction. My boss wasn't, because you had to go out of your way to interact with employees. You had to go out of your way, schedule discussions, like, and you had to like be on Teams constantly and hope your microphone worked and hope your dog wasn't barking in the background and your kids who are trying to get homeschooled because the schools are shut down, right? Like, it was wild. And I didn't have enough direction or support, and I had to figure out my job all by myself. And that was really hard. Even as a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, I struggled with trying to figure out what in the world am I supposed to be doing right now? And the challenge was that my boss was fairly new as well, and she had come in only a month or two before me. So I guarantee she was probably trying to figure out what she was supposed to be doing. So I would say that even though I had a very high commitment level to what I was doing, I had no confidence and I had no competence in what I was supposed to be doing, which means I needed high levels of support and high levels of direction, but I wasn't getting either. I take that back. I was getting support. It was not like, you know, it wasn't, I guess, ultra proactive support of like, hey, I know you're struggling. You probably need some stuff. Let me give you some this, that. It just wasn't there. And I, for about a year, I was struggling, right? And that was really hard. And I think about that quite a bit. When I was preparing this lesson, I kept going back to that moment and how I really struggled sitting in my home office trying to figure out how to run a program that actually that covered the entire Air National Guard. It was an A1 program for the entire Air National Guard that I was responsible for, and I didn't know what to do. That was tough, man. That was tough. So in retrospect, you know, I probably should have voiced my competence and my confidence levels at that time to my boss so that she would have known to be more directive and supportive, and I didn't do that. So I think I have a lesson learned for myself as how to be a better proactive follower, an active follower, and I think had my boss known that, she would probably reflect and say, you know what, I probably needed to be more supportive and directive during that time, but she didn't know, right? Have you had any personal experiences, not necessarily exactly like mine, but anything where the leadership style of someone over you didn't match your performance readiness level?
Yeah, I think back several years ago, I had a supervisor who was probably more of the the cheerleader type. And at the time, even though I was executing my day-to-day, I still felt longing for... I'd go to them and say, okay, now what else can I do? Like, I felt myself wanting them to either give me another responsibility, maybe, or maybe I was seeking development at that time. But I felt like I wanted a little more direction outside of the day-to-day taskings. And I don't know if I can point to all four of those right now and tell you how we didn't properly interact. But again, I felt like they were more so just, you're doing a good job, you're doing a good job, doing a good job. And I felt personally that I could do more. I wanted to do more. And it was just, I wasn't moving forward, I felt like.
I've had supervisors in the past that just, well, my example's going back to what I said was a hurdle for leaders, that just so many people that they have to look over, that they have to manage, it stretches them thin. And I alluded earlier that I need a little bit more support. Just, hey, keep doing what you're doing. Or, hey, you need to wrangle this back in. Stay on task and stay centered on this. Meanwhile, he's stretched so thin, he can't, like, we rarely talk. And I'm just wandering and don't know what to do.
Now, that's really good. So what we talk about, that kind of captures this moment, is the idea of achieving same page status, right? And what that means is subordinate and supervisor going and getting after same page status, right? So that requires, it's a two-way street, right? It requires some active followership to know their own limitations, to know the style of leadership that best suits them for their personality, combined with the leader identifying the performance readiness level of the follower and knowing exactly what type of leadership style to use in that moment. And so the only way that you can really achieve, I think anyways, this the idea of same page status is through interaction. Like, you gotta interact, you gotta talk, you have to work things out, be transparent, establish trust. So I think about the idea of how do you do that? Like, literally, tactically, how do you do that? How do you get on same page status with a subordinate if you are the leader? Or what if your boss isn't super proactive with this kind of stuff? How do you try and get after same page status with your boss if you don't have that? Any thoughts?
I mean, it comes down to really expressing your needs. And if you're not being heard, I don't know how you do it other than continue to repeat yourself, right? And keep seeking whatever it is you're missing. You know, open communication and transparency is the biggest thing that I can speak to in that respect. You don't know what you don't know. And you've got to have those conversations, and you've got to be willing to listen. And I think that's very key. I think there's a lot of instances where people will hear what you're saying, but they're not really listening, or they're missing the bigger point. And so it all comes down to very clear communication.
I think what you started with, that it's a two-way street, is a very important aspect of it. And that includes respect. Like, we have to respect people as individuals and treat people well, or they will choose not to be here.
Yeah.
No, that's great. I'm glad you mentioned that, because it makes me think about the time that I spent as an instructor and the director of operations at a training squadron within officer training school. And we had sort of a mantra there amongst the cadre that that was called mutual respect and dignity, right? It was something we talked about all the time, as even from like, military training environment, like basic training, officer training school, not always very fun, you know, a little bit aggressive at times. But even then, instructors were taught to do those things in the manner of having mutual respect and dignity for all trainees, right? And so even though you can be tough on a subordinate, you can be demanding for growth purposes or to meet mission requirements, but I believe you can still do that in a manner that promotes mutual respect and dignity between two human beings. And in order to get there, transparency, trust, you got to do those things. You got to put in the work. You got to build that relationship, that professional relationship, in order to really get after that. So what's great about that is that we have built-in mechanisms to do that on the military side. We have the Airman Comprehensive Assessment feedback system, right, where a supervisor is required to sit down with their subordinate and talk about these kind of things. So, Kyle, I encourage you, the next time you do an ACA feedback session with a subordinate, get past all of the check yes here, right? Get past all of that. You get past all the obligatory comments, and let's really get to the heart. Let's talk about this kind of stuff. Hey, man, tell me what you need to be more confident and competent in all the things I've asked you to do. How can I lead you better? What style of leadership best suits you? Do you like it when I give you lots of direction? Do you like it when I give you little direction? Do you want me to just give you a little nugget so you can run 100 miles an hour with it? Or do you want it to be more, more guidelines in place? Do you need, if you're not confident, what can I do to help you build that confidence? Can I help you build your confidence by providing more training, more repetitions of the thing you're not confident about? Right, those are the things that I think leaders can do to create an environment where subordinates feel supported with just enough directive behavior to get after it, right? And I think one of the overarching, one of the things that is the why about this is that what I think we really want to do as leaders is get every single person that's following us or every subordinate to become a highly competent, highly committed, and highly confident airman to go out and conquer the world and then get a promotion and then all of a sudden be not confident and competent anymore because you got a whole new thing to go do. And then you rinse, wash, repeat, right? And I think that's the cycle. That's the goal here, is to invoke an environment where followers can do that, to grow, to be fully competent, committed, and confident. And then when they've achieved that, guess what? Got a new challenge for you, a new opportunity, a new job where you start all over and then keep going higher and higher. Right? So I think that's what it's about. Easier said than done, right? It's easier said than done, because I think about sometimes, for instance, like, how have you ever been or have you ever misdiagnosed enthusiasm or confidence for ability? Like, have you ever seen that or ever had that yourself?
Yeah, I would say I've seen that. Yeah, very eager, new troop, give me everything you've got. I'm going to go take care of this and do it. And then they get lost along the way. Yeah, I think that's a very common thing you see with new troops that come in. And maybe I have a different approach, but I kind of expect that. We talk about commitment, and I think about investment in there as well, right? And so I really love to basically give my airmen these tasks and let them go free, let them run with it with that eagerness that they have, and then I'm excited for them to come back to me if they fail. I'm not afraid of failure. I think that's one of the best ways to learn, and then you jump right in there as that supervisor and say, all right, yeah, nope, I've done that before as well, yep, and so this is how we'll get over that.
Great. So I think what I'd kind of like to do is just wrap this thing up. And I want to give you a simple four-step process that as the leader, you can use to just follow this script to get after this thing, right? And so those four steps are diagnose, adapt, communicate, and advance, right? So diagnose is understanding the task, meaning understanding the commitment level, the competence that the subordinate has in the moment. That's diagnosing the task at hand or the situation. Then adapting your style, adapt your style to match that perfectly. Do you need extra support? Little support. A lot of direction? Little direction. You find the sweet spot, so you adapt your natural style to do that. Then you communicate to say, okay, here's what we need to do. I'm going to either give you direction, or I'm going to tell you I'm not giving you direction, or I'm going to offer support if you need it, or be more hands-off. And then sort of the final step is to advance, meaning getting you to that higher level of performance like we talked about, building up and creating opportunities so that that airman or that young NCO can become more competent, more committed, more confident to go on and do great things. And I think that's what it's all about.
That's it for this month's 188th Wing podcast. We'll have a new episode released each week of Drill, so keep a lookout. Thank you for listening. Join us next time.